You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 5th of May, we have got AMD Q1 earnings after US close today. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Gary Boyson, Rand Swiss. So we have another fuel price surge kicking in tomorrow. How's he looking at discretionary consumer stocks? I mean, I don't know. I mean, there's some cheap stuff there, but man, our wallets are going to be crushed. We're chatting with Riza Hendrikse from PPS Investment. How they position their portfolio post the war in Iran and their views on emerging markets. We've had a lot of bullish views on it coming into the year. Does the war change things? And then head of origination and deals at the JSC, issuing of the first nature-linked performance-based bond last month. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, why all banks are chasing affluent customers. They're just so much more profitable. And Business Day, Union rejects Pick and Pay overhaul, warns of forced exits, and says Pick and Pay's proposed overhaul could push workers out despite assurances. Morning markets, US was red, S&P 0.4% lower, NASDAQ down 0.2%. East is mostly red, Sydney the exception, up 0.2%. Tokyo is still closed, this time for Children's Day. Hong Kong is down just over 1%, and Tencent down just under 1%. Commodities, mostly red. Gold futures, $4,548. Brent is green at $113.20. Platinum red, $1,973. Palladium red, $1,501. The Rand is $16.81. Bitcoin, $80,900. And top 40 opening call, red open, 550 points or 0.5% lower.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss. Gary, always appreciate the early morning. As I said in the intro there, I mean, we've got petrol price and diesel price increases coming through effective tomorrow. The numbers are horrifying. Another 6-odd rand in diesel, 3 rand in petrol. It's going to take diesel to 32 rand. This is going to crunch consumers' wallets. And we're not alone. This is happening all over the world, which raises the point around those discretionary consumer stocks. I mean, is there any value in looking at some of them, or is this just too much unknown and best we stay away?
Oh, I think last month reminded us that staying out of the market, even in nervous times, is a very dangerous prospect.
Yeah.
Because we saw everything ripping like it did. But the discretionary consumer space is difficult because, obviously, as you said, there's all the obvious ones that you would expect. I mean, you know, our wallets are going to get absolutely destroyed by the petrol price. But at the same time, discretionary spending doesn't disappear entirely. Really, people are going to trade down. They're going to go look at like more value-orientated retailers, so they'll probably do a little bit better. You can probably look, maybe be a little bit more cautious around the credit retailers. You know, cash is king in this environment, so look at more stable cash retailers. I think, you know, apparel is going to get hit. I mean, we've seen it getting hit already, and I think the question for me is like, has it been hit hard enough given the environment? I mean, we know that Brent crude oil prices are at what, $117 a barrel this morning. These fuel prices that fuel price increases that were pushed through, I mean, this is coming on an average fuel price of $101 a barrel on Brent. So I mean, we've got more pain to come if we don't see a resolution from the Straits, in some sort of oil flowing through the Straits of Hormuz. So it's a major problem. This is an enormous price shock. This is way bigger than Ukraine. And I think, you know, with the adjustments that we've seen, let's say, you know, like if we take, let's say, a 2-month price move, which kind of takes us to the beginning of the conflict. I mean, we've got maybe Truist down 12%. We've got Pepco down, you know, maybe 13%, Mr. Price down about 11, Fashini down about 10. I don't know if these moves are big enough yet to really kind of adjust for the scope of the impact. So I think I would still be very cautious here, to be honest. And I think maybe you know, also just understand that this impact is going to be far larger. It's just, it's not just a local like impact. It's going to be an international impact. And what that's going to do is it's also going to impact things like tourism. So we're going to have, you know, we're having flights canceled. You know, ticket prices are going up. There's going to be shortages, European, US, Asian tourists coming to South Africa. You know, they're going to delay holidays. They're going to delay trips here if they can. They're going to do the Zoom meeting instead of coming and seeing people face to face. So I think that's critical. And then also the other kind of stats that I picked up is it's just how fast South Africans are actually adjusting. So if you look at telematics data, fuel reward swipes, etc., there was a survey done across 200,000 clients. I mean, you know, we're talking about fuel transactions dropping by 28% in response to this. We're talking about trips taking down 10%. People are just not driving.
it's
scary how fast, and that shows how constrained our consumer is. So yes, I think at some point there will be value, but I'm not sure if it's here yet.
And I take your point. We're adjusting fast, and it's to the point. You know, we're making a plan. We're not going to necessarily get back to sort of February levels in a hurry, even if things start to normalize. It's going to take time for oil to come down. It's going to take time for us to start feeling confident again. Gary Boyson, Rand Swiss, saying be careful there. Yeah, there's maybe cheap, but maybe it gets cheaper. It's going to get tough out there. Gary, always appreciate the early morning time. Give you money, smoother returns for Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Riza Hendricks. He's a portfolio manager at PPS Investments. Riza, I appreciate the time. Let's first look at first quarter, which started the year off, I mean, pretty much as we had ended last year. EMs were doing well. Locally, our inflation was looking good. We were hoping for some rate cuts, equities and bonds looking positive. And that, of course, up until the end of Feb, when things markedly changed locally and globally with the US attack on Iran. It really was a quarter that ended fundamentally different to how we came into the year.
Absolutely, Simon. Thanks so much for having me, firstly. I mean, it really was a tale of two halves, I suppose, if one, just in the way that you described it. It feels like it was a long time ago, but I mean, really, that sort of optimism that I think we all came into the year with, it seems to be a thing of the past. And I mean, now it's all about the war and about what's going to happen to oil price and inflation, etc. So it certainly is a world apart from where we came into 2026 from.
If we look at the sort of March and I suppose the period subsequent to that, I mean, was there much that you and your colleagues did differently to your portfolios? Was there knee-jerk or was it, I don't know, portfolios resilient? And whilst this was probably not expected, kind of you managed your way through it.
You hit the nail on the head there, Simon. So we certainly didn't knee-jerk anything. It was actually quite hard to make sense of all of the news flow and the frequency of it, and also just hard to actually make head or tails of it. So we made no knee-jerk changes. We were actually sort of eyeing certain levels just in terms of when one should ultimately be adding more risk into portfolios. Because if one looks at sort of the past playbook, these types of events tend to be short-lived and they tend to be something that one wants to really lean into. Now, whether or not that ends up being the case, I think is still an open question, because I think certainly things are not panning out the way that people might have been expecting, let's say, a month or so ago.
I take your point, and I particularly like the idea. I mean, the sensors kind of almost have a playbook for every scenario, so that if something like this happens, suddenly something you liked but was expensive might not be so expensive anymore. I'm thinking bonds, which had had a spectacular year, but you know, we saw our 10-year out, was it almost 1% or so? Opportunity suddenly comes. We need to kind of have that shopping list ready.
That's so true. I mean, if we just think back to sort of how bonds had initially sold off, the yields came all the way from sort of 8 point something to in the nines. And that was right before, I think, the 8th of April, which is when that ceasefire was initially announced.
Yeah.
So we had our sort of fingers on the trigger there just in terms of upweighting bonds that we had been sort of light on in portfolios. But then the following day, the bonds all of a sudden just ran because of the news of that ceasefire.
You mentioned the ceasefire. I mean, talks are ongoing. They're providing some relief for markets, but you talk around short-lived. It's also sort of investing in a world of where we really have unknown. I mean, we don't know how this is going to play out. We're not sure what timelines are. We know that the US wants peace. We know that Iran probably wants it as well, but that it's not going to be an easy process by any stretch.
Absolutely. I mean, one can look at all these various scenarios that I think people are sort of talking about, whether it's this kind of a muddy truce situation or a frozen conflict, et cetera, or whether it ultimately escalates. I think what is just very interesting is just how the markets have taken it in its stride, really, if one just looks at, especially the offshore equity markets, the US, really seems to have just taken all of this in its stride, which I think is also just another thing that's quite difficult to make sense of. I mean, I know the earnings have certainly been coming through, especially with the US companies. But I mean, I think that there is still quite a lot to be worried about out there.
I take your point. I mean, US markets at highs is head-scratching. Earnings aside, there were some great numbers out last week. But the one issue is surely the energy shock. Again, just so much unknown, so much out there that we don't know how it's going to play. And that has to be something that could prove to be perhaps worse than markets are currently anticipating.
Yes, I mean, you mentioned the energy shock, and I think the other word that's sort of being thrown about these days is stagflation. And and what that means is, what impact is that energy shock going to have on growth and inflation? Because the combination of slower growth and higher inflation is obviously stagflation. And so we have to keep a close eye on that one. I have seen that sort of institutions quietly sort of just trimming their growth forecasts for 2026. But also, just on the oil topic, while we are there, I mean, the other interesting point was really just the UAE's decision to leave OPEC. And I mean, how the market really just also, that was another thing that it really just took in its stride. But gosh, there's just so much out there to keep us occupied and to give us cause for concern, I think.
Yeah, that UAE decision, to your point, it would have been a giant decision under normal circumstances, but seems to, I don't know, the market kind of shrugged it off as it has been doing. A last question. We came into the year with a lot of folks talking around emerging markets and thinking that they were looking more attractive from a number of perspectives against developed markets. Does that still broadly hold, although maybe some T's and C's in light of the current circumstances?
I think it does still broadly hold, Simon. Part of the story there, obviously, was also just the dollar's cycle. And I mean, obviously, we saw last year the dollar was fell in a heap and everybody thought it was the end of the dollar. But I mean, look what's happened this year. The sort of DM stuff has all started to come through once again, and sort of the rand has sort of gone sort of, I suppose, sideways from point to point. But I mean, I think broadly speaking, if one just looks at the valuations in emerging markets versus developed markets, you would think that this is a good time to sort of be holding more EM than maybe what you have been holding in the last couple of years, because over the next 5 to 10 years, you probably are going to do better in EM versus DM, just given where the valuations are.
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, I mean, some of those numbers out of the US last week were staggering, but the valuations are, well, they're staggering as well. We'll leave it there. Reeza Hendricks, Portfolio Manager, PPS Investments, appreciate the time.
Let your money weather the storms with StanLib Asset Management. Invest in the StanLib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Sam McCrossey. He's head of origination and deals at the JSE. Sam, appreciate the time. Last month, you listed the first nature-linked performance-based bond. I say first, definitely first for the JSE, probably the continent, perhaps the world, I'm not sure. This is from First Rand Bank. Tell me a bit around a nature-linked performance-based bond. What are we talking about here?
Yeah, so very exciting. And thanks for the time, Simon. So what this bond does is that the better the outcomes for nature, the better the interest rate on the bond is for the issuers. So it was priced at JIBAR plus 60 basis points. It's a five-year bond. But, you know, if things don't go according to plan, that spread above JIBAR can increase. And so it incentivizes and aligns environmental outcomes for both the issuer and investors.
I get that. This particular one, as I said, it was the First Rand Bank. It was Cape Water performance based. And in essence, and I mean, it's a cliche to say it, but it potentially benefits everyone, including nature in the process.
100%. And the part of nature that we're focused on in this particular bond is water, right? So we know that water is a scarce resource in South Africa, but this particular bond looks at projects and products that help kind of make sure that the few water resources that we have are well maintained, kept clean, the infrastructure works, and that water is supplied for, you know, domestic use, for industrial use, etc.
And this one, obviously, water. But I mean, we could substitute the water with alien vegetation. I mean, almost anything, I suppose, in a sense, if it's measurable. The key point is it needs to be measurable.
100%, 100%. And this is the theory behind our whole sustainability segment on the JSE in terms of bonds. So just like with your audited financials for listed companies, we rely on the auditors to sign off on audited financials every 6 months. Mm-hmm. With the sustainability segment on the bond market, we rely on third-party opinions from experts in the environmental space and the sustainability space to say, yes, this bond has met the sustainability requirements that the issuer promised to meet. And so that then gives us a good sense as a regulator and as a market that people are doing what they promised to do in terms of the T's and C's of a particular bond.
Yeah, it's that T's and C's, it's the measurability. If I understand correctly, this was a $2.5 billion issuance, which is, I mean, that's a big number.
It is. And you know what's great about it is that it really is around blended finance, right? So, so it's a bit of a buzzword in development finance where you've got grants, you've got interest rates that are low because they're coming from a concession giver like a DFI. Then you've got like a commercial part of the bond. Mm-hmm. And so this had all sorts of different levels. I mean, RMB's First Rand Foundation acted as an anchor with their funding. We had the IFC come in. We had Aluwani Capital Partners, FSD Africa come in. So everybody kind of doing their bits to fill up that cap table of 2.5 billion rand, but saying, hey, some of us are foundations, so, and some of us are DFIs, and some of us are commercial. And so our T's and C's and the return rates that we require are going to be different at each layer of the capital structure.
It also, for an investor out there, you know, I'm thinking just a good old-fashioned an income fund or something like this. There's a lot of talk around ESG and there's a lot of ways of doing it. I'm a big fan of ESG and chat a lot about it on the show. This really sits at the heart of that in many ways and is part of this growing investment green theme.
100%. And you know, what we liked about this also, there's a whole host of very return-focused investors as well that were into this, right? So we're talking about Eskom Pension and Provident Fund. Ashburton was in their Optimum Investment Group, Sanlam Life, you know. So it's a great tool for people who maybe don't have a heart as you and I, Simon, or RDSG, but like the theme, and because they've got commercial returns that they need to meet. But this gives them both that commercial return, but also they can go back to their clients and say that in meeting commercial returns, we are also doing something great for the country and for the environment.
Absolutely. And fundamentally different risk profiles. This is not lending money to, you're lending money, but it's a different risk profile. It's that correlation which becomes important. I think it's great. We'll leave it there. That's Simon Worski. He is head of origination deals at the JSE. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. I was chatting with Adrian Saville yesterday, Professor Adrian Saville from Gibbs, talking around stagflation fears. We've got inflation climbing, that petrol price increase is only going to push that higher, and growth stalling. Again, if your costs are going to hurt growth. We asked you, how worried should the global economy be about stagflation? Over half of you said very worried. A third said we'll wait and see. The rest of you said not at all, but certainly the concerns are real. Our poll today is from Gary Boyson, the interview at the top of the show. Discretionary stocks, is the opportunity here? Gary is being cautious. He's being very cautious. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobokle, Sabu, Suren, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and an awesome review in your podcatcher of choice. And we'll chat again tomorrow. Outlook for the Rand.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.